Hello and welcome to Come With The Sauce. After 2 months, we're back for our 15th episode of this very extended fourth season. Rob and I talk about all the lace in Lucha Libre, including last night's Lucha Underground episode with the Hell of a War match. Rob and I had talked before this show, so we both get to share our thoughts about the craziest match in the history of the show, perhaps, and about where the show is going into Ultima Lucha. We also chat about CML, their efforts during the recent earthquake, and how strange it is not to have them around on a daily basis. We talk about AAA's experiment with streaming the Ring Rockstars on Twitch, and if they're going to and try to figure out if they're going to do it again this weekend for Heroes of Immortales, and we break down that card a little bit. We talk about the Crash and their plans for running many shows in October and November, and try to figure out if they're finally actually going to be on TV or not. Rob has some thoughts about how Grand Metallica's career is going or won't be going anytime soon, even after WWE. And we talk about plans for a possible trip to Mexico City in November. Thanks for listening. We're planning on coming back a lot quicker than usual with a perhaps live podcast after the Ultima Lucha 3 finale on October 18th. Watch my website. I'll have more details when that comes up. Thanks, everyone. Okay, Rob, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. We've had the earthquake. We've had the anniversary show. We've had the Lucha Underground episode that just aired. But before we talk about any of those things, I have to ask you one big question. What's your favorite Rush matches?
My favorite Rush matches?
Yes. I couldn't get Daniel Bryan and I couldn't get Jurassic Boy, so I thought I'd ask you.
Oh, so not matches that have happened, like dream matches.
No, matches that have happened.
Oh, matches that have happened? Well,
yeah.
I like the Leo Rush match from CZW that he just had.
Yes.
That was pretty funny, though. He replied thinking it was him, and then he got like a million tweets right away that, dude, it's not you.
Yeah, that's a harsh way to find out that you're not as important as you thought you were. But
yeah.
But
my favorite Rush match is the Negro Casas match.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one I like the best too. But I would like to see him against Dalen O'Brien, but I'm not sure if that's the greatest match for the other guy. Be fun though.
Well, yeah, I mean, two things. Number one, Daniel Bryan is clearly not watching random Pueblo or Tuesday shows where Rush is teaming with his father.
Yes, he's got more sense than that.
And number two, I mean, here's the fantasy world. The fantasy world is Daniel Bryan gets out of his contract, calls up CMLL, says, hey, I want to feud with Atlantis. Can we build up an anniversary match? And can I do dream technical matches versus Negro Navarro and certain guys? And then there's the real world we live in where he'll be booked. CML will be like, it's just another random foreigner. We'll put him in some trios matches. Maybe we'll give him a Sunday match against
Ultimo Guerrero.
Sure. And the anniversary, we'll put him in a trios match in the semi-main event where we have room for no, where there's, it's just a filler match. I mean,
guys, work opposite Tenzan on the other side coming in to visit.
Yeah. Let's get it together, guys. This is the same company where they brought in like Prince Devitt when Devitt was one of the top guys out there. And they put him in a random trios match at the anniversary to build up a match with Drago and Rojo Jr. of all people. I mean, they don't know these people. There's nobody in charge knows these. The only way you would get something done in CML is if you had somebody who was like Sam Adonis, who, like, if he wants his own stuff booked, he bothers the office, he gets it done. I mean, that's why he got the Blue Panther thing done. But I don't think Sam Adonis is going to be there to help Daniel Bryan. Sam's there to help Sam. So it's not going to happen. I hate to break the news to everybody.
Yeah, it's probably not.
Including Daniel Bryan. I don't want to break the news to him either.
No, he's going to be really sad when he finds out that.
Yeah.
It's now, if some indie promotion wants to book him for shows, that may seem more likely. But for him to get the dream feuds that people want to see, I'm not sure about that. But who knows? I still don't believe he's leaving WWE until he actually leaves WWE.
I think he's leaving. I just think that, you know, I mean, best case scenario is maybe Ultimo Dragon runs a Dragon Mania and he winds up in Arena Mexico that way.
Yes.
Working. Most people don't even remember. He's worked Arena Coliseo before.
Right, on the Tori Human show.
And that was just what, like a 4-on-3 handicap match or something random.
Yeah. I don't know about him coming in full time, but I guess we'll see.
It'd be nice. I mean, I want it to happen. I'm not saying this because I don't want it to happen. I would love to see. Honestly, my plan is if he ever works Arena Mexico and it's something big, I want to go down there, even if it's not an anniversary, even if it's just a random show. I would love to be there to see Daniel Bryan against Atlantis or whoever, whatever. Even Ultimo Guerrero, as much as we make fun of it, I would love to see that live. But I just don't think that it's going to go down the way people are, especially him, the way he's imagining it, just because CML is so not on the ball. I mean, they're basically at AAA's level when AAA brought in Daniel Bryan and Cubs. Here's a good trivia question for you. Can you name Daniel Bryan's match at Triple Mania?
It was Daniel Bryan as Teddy Jack, because he teamed with Teddy Hart and Jack Evans, yeah, versus Crazy Boy Joe Leader, and I don't know who the third person was. Was that Psychosis at that point?
Ultimo Gladiador.
Ultimo Gladiador. And then the other one was a family, the Tijuana team. TJ Boy was on it, because I remember TJ Boy being in the match. Might have been Psychosis and X-Fly, but I'm not sure.
It was TJ Extreme, not TJ Boy.
Oh, yeah.
And Halloween. And,
of course, Halloween.
And Crazy Boy.
Crazy Boy and the Tijuana team?
Wait, Crazy. It was Halloween, TJ Extreme. It wasn't Joe Leader, though. Crazy Boy was in there somewhere. Oh, I'd have to go back and check. But yeah, I'm surprised you remember TJ at all. So that was the whole reason of the trivia. So you ruined it.
Yeah, it was.
How could you forget Ultimo Gladiador?
Because Ultimo Gladiador has been 500 different guys. It was Crazy Boy, Ultimo Gladiador, and Ricky Marvin. Versus,
oh, right, Ricky was in there.
Versus Extreme Tiger, Halloween, and TJ Extreme.
Right.
Versus Brian Danielson, Jack Evans, Teddy Hart. And I'd like to say that I'm offended that Wikipedia does not have a page for TJ Extreme. That's just wrong.
And if go ahead.
That's also a show that had a Bobby Lashley match for no particular reason.
Yeah, if I remember right, it was elimination, and they actually got rid of Daniel Bryan's team first. So
right.
He basically showed up just to do nothing.
Yeah. He had a 14-minute match.
Yeah.
And people didn't see what the big deal was with him. But that's a story from another day. The dream match we actually saw this week was the Killshot-Dante Fox match from Lucha Underground, which I saw last year, and then everyone got to see last night. And it was a thing that you really should see if you haven't seen it. What did you think when you saw it?
First of all, I want to ask you, when was this actually taped? Was this April 2016?
June 25th.
Oh, so it's a little bit later than that. Okay. Where can I put this in match? Can I name this match of your candidate this year, or do I have to retroactively add it?
Voices of Wrestling, I've talked them into in the past to letting you, whenever Lucha Underground airs, that's the year it counts. But everywhere else, it's a match that does not exist on the list.
Okay, well then, I would definitely put it on my match of your candidate list for this year. And I'm very curious, as someone who was there live, if you could tell us, were there any major, because, you know, everybody always says Lucha Underground has the unfair advantage of editing stuff to make it look better on TV. So you tell us, live, were we missing stuff? Did they make it look better on TV? Or go ahead.
It's, you know, 19 months ago, but not 19, what, or 15 months ago. But it largely was the match that we saw on this. The match I saw live was largely the match that took place. Seeing longer live, which I'm not sure if this was so many crazy things that were happening that felt like it went longer, or if they just kind of cleaned it up and took a few spots away. Like, I noticed in the second fall, that ladder just suddenly materialized in the corner of the ring when it wasn't there before. So I think there was probably stuff that they took out that I'm just not remembering. But I think most of it was as it actually happened.
That's pretty crazy. And the only thing I noticed, because I was actually looking to see if they would, how they edit stuff. That's kind of my thing when I watch Lucha Underground, is to see like when guys jump from one side of the ring to the other, because it's kind of obvious sometimes. But in between the second and third fall, I noticed whatever happened at the end of the second fall was the finish, and they went to commercial, they came back. There was definitely an object that was in the ring that was missing. Like the barbed wire board had been cleaned up at that point.
Yeah, I think they did. They had them sit in the middle of the ring while they cleaned up a little bit there in between falls.
Right, because then it comes back and they're on their knees and then they start brawling, which out of all the crazy spots in the match, that was one of my favorite things, when the third fall started with them just punching the crap out of each other.
Yeah, I think everyone's going to look at the big spots, and the big spots were crazy impressive, but they really got the emotion of the fight in between the big spots that felt like they were really that angry and that much trying to kill each other, that they weren't just going from big spot to big spot. There was some general, they showed some emotion in the fight as well.
Yeah, this was definitely the complete opposite of when they did the police match with Joey Ryan and Cortez.
Yes.
That was like the comedy version, and this was like, no, we're going to use this stip to... They used the stip really well. They had all the weapons. It really felt like when he was dragging him at the end into the medical thing, I mean, you knew that was the finish. You knew it was the end of the war. It had some finality to it. It was just mind-blowing. The first fall, like, they did enough in that first fall where even if they would have just gone another, like, only done a match in straight falls and ended it in a couple minutes, I would have already thought, like, no, really, this was one of the best matches in Lucha Underground history, because that first fall, they were just killing themselves knowing they still had two more falls and a ton of other crazy spots. It was crazy.
Yeah, that backdrop through the glass as just a first fall finish, that would have been enough for a lot of matches. And I think the athletic stuff they did with the springboard Spanish fly spot, with Dante Fox doing the super far leg drop, all sorts of stuff in that first part. You could tell that they were pacing themselves a little bit by not going top speed all the way, but they did crazy stuff enough in that first 10 minutes that would have been a memorable match on its own.
It was the leg drop was insane when he, because I avoided Twitter, I didn't want any spoilers, no gifs or nothing. When he went up there, I was like, oh my God, what is he going to do? And boom, he did that leg drop. Ooh, like the landing on that, it probably hurt him more than it hurt Killshot taking it. But oh my God, that was crazy. And then the Spanish fly, like you said, the bump through the, like, I'm trying to think, is that the first time glass has been used in like anywhere other than, I mean, like a U.S. promotion? I can't remember. Did WWE ever use glass?
The famous WWE glass spot is that Kurt Angle throwing Shane McMahon through the glass entrance set in that one King of the Ring match they had.
I remember. Yeah.
But it's not like a pane of glass like that. I can't think of someone using that. That seems like something they would avoid normally.
It was very much two CZW guys doing a high-end CZW death match, basically, on just like national TV, because that's all it was, basically. They even write down to one of my pet peeves in CZW is when they're setting up these gimmick spots, they have like all the ringside assistants helping them set it up, the referees helping them set it up, and I just hate watching that because it takes the whole believability out of it. But in this case, I actually like, you could, they had Fox mic'd up or Killshot, one or the other. So you could hear them like actually threatening Rick Knox, like, you better help me or I'm going to take you out. And I actually believed that they would take them out because this was like no DQ and it was the end of their feud. I didn't have a problem with them actually getting a little help here.
Yeah. Yeah. They tried to make sense of everything they were doing. They tried to get the most out of what they were doing, where nothing was done just so someone went into it right away. There was a couple teases to make you want to see it before you actually saw it. And so when it finally happened, people exploded because they had been waiting for it. So I think they deserve credit for the effort they put in, but also they and whoever helped them deserve credit for how well they laid out the whole thing as well, too.
Yep, there was lots of good visuals, like the blood-stained mat. Right before they went to commercial at one point, they zoomed in on Fox's back all cut up, and that went right into the logo heading to commercial. And then they had that disgusting part where the part of his elbow, I think it was left on the stretcher.
Yeah.
I think it was from his elbow, because his elbow seemed pretty cut up.
Yeah, and that wasn't like even something they did on purpose. That looked like something where he fell on the glass after the first fall. Early in the second fall, after all the glass was on the mat. So it was amazing how much blood that was in that match. Especially, I think I was rewatching it again before we talked, and Killshot bleeds so much early that I think he stops he runs out of blood to kind of sort of to bleed by the end of that match, and Dante's bleeding, but he's kind of stopped bleeding by that point.
Is this the best? Two questions: the best Lucha Underground match of the season, number one, and number two, since you've been to multiple tapings, is this the best live Lucha Underground match you saw, without spoiling anything that might be coming this season?
I think it's tough to say because the Phoenix Mil Muertes first Grave Consequences match was so great, and it also they did a lot with emotion that I think it's the only thing that's close to it. And then I also really like the Angelico Son of Havoc Evilice Trio style win because there was a great story behind it, and it had the first Angelico jumps off the roof moment. But I think this was the best match because I didn't see the Phoenix Mil Muertes match live. I think this was a better match live, but I think both were just really just emotional, and they made you really care about what the outcome was or about the guys who were doing all this crazy stuff. So I think that's one part where when Lucha Underground does it right, that they do a better job of making you care about the matches than most anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's definitely, I think, the match of the season and probably my top five of every season so far of Lucha Underground. I think they killed it. And, it seems kind of obnoxious to say this, but it's a star-making performance for both of them. Unfortunately, I don't know if they're going to get to become the stars on Lucha Underground and move on to something after this.
Yeah, there's a great buzz to the episode. I think people heard about heard it being talked up, and maybe more people find a way to watch it. But if you look at what people watched on El Rey yesterday, it was the 32nd most watched episode of the season of 37. So it did. There's no special viewership for it. It'll probably have it'll probably be big among the people who did see it, but I just don't know if they're going to reach people. And I found that number concerning. Just because I know there'll be a buzz for this match and maybe more people find it later on, but this was also the first week of Ultima Lucha. And if anything's going to mean anything for that show, it's they've got this Ultima Lucha concept hyped up. And it did not seem to make any difference in terms of getting people to watch. So I'm concerned about... This was a really great match, but the outcome of people not watching it on the network itself is not a great sign for it to being renewed.
Yeah, the numbers are always disappointing, but I honestly don't put too much stock in Lucha Underground numbers just because small sample size. I mean, it's like TNA number, GFW numbers.
Numbers, really.
Yeah, when the numbers are this small, the variance doesn't really bother me. But it would be nice if the audience was at least maintaining a certain level over the weeks. The fact that it goes down sometimes, I mean, I don't even know who's watching this show. But I don't know. I don't want to get too bogged down on the negative stuff right now because that match was so good and they deserve it. Like, I don't even want to talk about the other thing that happened on the show. I mean, it was just a stupid.
Did you get cut off? Or did you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, the other thing was just the random stuff with Tejano that they have not really made any interesting. And maybe in the long term, it works out that you put Tejano and Wagner and someone else together, and then they have a new role because what they were doing wasn't working. But the route they get there hasn't been that interesting. It hasn't been that interesting, and a lot of stuff seems like they started in episode 25 and stretched it all the way to 40. It was just not that much of a story to go that long. But
yeah.
But
this whole feud was really good, though, like from start to finish, the kill shot versus, I mean, it had a beginning, it had a middle, and it had the conclusion here. So,
yeah,
I think that was very good.
And they got to the point where you want to see both of these guys again. And Dante didn't do anything that said that he was the face at the end of the match. But he's obviously the next time he shows up, whenever that next time might be, the crowd's going to be happy to see him again because of what the performances he's done in this match and all his matches the second half of the season.
Yep.
And so because Lucha Underground and El Rey are weird and TLN are weird. You've seen next week's episode without giving anything away. Do you think what do you generally have a sense of for next week? Is it good, bad, watchable?
Next week, it very much exemplifies that this is a Jekyll and Hyde type show or company. And I think the next week will definitely have people talking, whether it be about positive, depending on how you look at it, positives and negatives of Lucha Underground. Next week's definitely going to be an example of why this show, it really shows why Lucha Underground is so different from everything else, but also why being different might not exactly be helpful when it comes to keeping the show on the air and getting advertisers. But the Phoenix versus Moth match is next week, and it's definitely a good match. I would definitely tell people to tune in to see that one.
Yeah, I think that's another big point that I want to make about this Date Killshot match, is that I don't think on any other network this match airs. I mean, you mentioned that you don't think any U.S. promotions does this. I don't think if, for some reason, Spike had picked up Lucha Underground 2 seasons ago, that they would have let this happen. They would have let this match go with this blood and this glass, that someone else would have stepped in and said, no, this is too far for our network. Or if they were on Pop or on Destination America or whatever that channel was. I think the problem with El Rey is it's so small that you can't really build a big audience of it. But the positive of El Rey is that they've really given them an opportunity to push the limits in a way that no one who actually has a viewership would allow them. I think that's overall a good thing for if you like the series, because the show on Lucha on El Rey is a lot different and a lot more interesting than it would have been on any other network. But it also shows that if they don't get something done with El Rey and go with a different network, it's probably going to feel like a different show in some ways.
Yeah. And honestly, I find that a bit sad, just because this is the type of wrestling I like. Like, I mean, it didn't make me feel squeamish or anything. I liked it. There's an alternative like this, but when you are the alternative, you do get your options limited at times. So that's just something that comes with the territory.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything else I wanted to say about the show. You should go ahead and see it if you haven't seen it already, because it's worth the $3 or worth whatever illegal download you're doing. I would still say that to track down HD, because HD adds a lot to the show. It always does. And that's the other downside about El Rey, is that the HD never took off and didn't get picked up many places. And so we're watching these shows at a quality that's less than pretty much every other TV show on there. But if you buy the HD version, you're really entertained by all the glass flying up from the mat as they keep hitting it during the second and third fall.
And the bloodstained mat.
Yeah. So that leaves the rest of Lucha, which isn't a lot of Lucha, because the earthquake has really messed things up. CML has now gone for over 2 weeks now, I think.
Well, yeah. Hold on. Everybody says that we're always so negative, so I do want to mention.
Yeah.
I have no complaints about any CML matches in the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
There hasn't been a single bad match in the last 2 weeks.
So you wouldn't watch the Guadalajara matches then, I assume.
Oh, well, yeah. I haven't watched that TV.
There's been no bad streaming matches. Every streaming match has been great. Maybe not every streaming show has been great, but every streaming match has been great. Yeah, it's just, it's good that they're finally coming back on Tuesday. Just mostly because hopefully it means that parts of Mexico City are going back to normal, but also more that we actually get to see some of this stuff. Just the usual drumbeat of 5 different CML shows a week, it's just kind of, at least gives you something to pay attention to, even if a lot of the matches you'd like to avoid, there's at least some stuff hidden in there and maybe some promise of some good stuff, and it's just been weird not to have any CML around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as a hardcore Lucha fan, I'm sure, I'm not even embarrassed to admit that. I'm sure you either. I mean, my entire concept of time usually revolves around CML. Like, how do I know that it's Tuesday? Oh, because I know that there's a CML stream tonight. Or it's like Thursday and I know tomorrow's Friday. So I know that, okay, I'm going to have to find a place to watch CML that stream is on. And this has just disrupted everything. I lost track of what day it was, because I'm like, well, CML wasn't on yesterday. So what day are we on? Like, everything. And it's more of a, I think I messaged you during the week that saying that, like, because they announced cards for this week, even though they're not doing the shows anymore,
yeah.
But the cards were out there, and it just felt like back to normalcy for me, because even if I'm not watching the stream live and I'm watching it on a tape delay, just that the cards are out there, it gives me something to like just check, like, okay, CMLL's running tonight. Oh, this third match looks like shit. The second match looks like shit, but the cards are there. That it's my normalcy. And now without the cards, it's like something's missing in my wrestling life.
Yeah, it's just unusual not to have something that have the next CMLL lineup. You're waiting to see it come up, or just to find out which weird feud they decide to go someplace. I think we've officially marked down that Negro Casas Shocker tag team title run is completely jinxed, since that was a program they kept on trying to do, and one person missed it 1 week, another person missed it the second week, and then there was an earthquake the third week, and now they're not even trying it, and that's probably for the best. I think they should just be tag team champions forever, just for everyone's safety's sake. But
what I found extra hilarious is, like, even though the CMLL shows are not happening, apparently the feuds are happening as if the shows actually occurred.
Yes.
Like they have, I mean, the show is running, so they're doing Soberano versus Cavernario, first time ever singles match outside of in Busca de Unidolo on Monday in Puebla for a title. And it's like, where did that match come from? Oh, well, the week before they were supposed to be in a trios match. So if you're a normal wrestling promotion, you'd be like, well, we never set the match up, so why don't we just do a trios match this week and set up the title match for the following week? But no, in CMLL world, that match happened somewhere in someone's imagination, and now they're doing the singles match.
Yeah, it's like they could have just run back the same cards that they were supposed to run, like any other normal promotion would have done. But no, they have to move on with the next program. This is, I'm sure they have like a month of bookings at the time or something that they don't tell anybody, but someone does all the work for a month and then takes the next 3 weeks off and then shows up next month. And that's the programming department, pretty much.
Yeah, things just keep going. Like, why are we doing Flip Gordon versus Ultimo Guerrero at Arena Mexico? Well, probably because it was supposed to be set up the week before on the show that didn't happen. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's got to be one of the matches next week when they get back to normal, because you would think that they're going to do it. I mean, I still think because when they announced it today, they said that the Tuesday card is going to be loaded with stars. And if you look at the current Tuesday lineup, it's not loaded with stars. So I have a feeling they're going to change that up just because they owe certain wrestlers bookings, and the guys who are going to be screwed are going to be the undercard guys who they don't get as much bookings as the top guys, because CMLL's got to start fitting these guys in and making up dates that they've missed.
Yeah, if you're someone on the apocalypse there, you're having a long couple months. You're probably not getting booked all that much, because they have to make up the other guys are going to be a bigger priority. And so they're probably going to be better cards for the time being, because the opener guys are easier ones to squeeze out. But they really have to do that if they're going to do the Flip Gordon and Ultimo Guerrero match, which they don't really have to do, but CMLL, they kind of have to do on that Tuesday, because he's going to be gone on that Wednesday. So,
yeah, plus, like I was tweeting about today, I mean, this is an interesting time for CMLL, because out of all the problems, I mean, this is relatively low on the scale of problems that come with the earthquake, but the tourism industry in Mexico is probably going to be affected. I mean, unless you're a crazy person, it's not like you're going to be saying, well, I'm going on vacation and I want to go to Mexico City right now, because everybody knows Mexico City is in a state of disaster right now. And CMLL business has been propped up for the longest, like over a year now, by the tourism. Like, you see the cards on the shows on Tuesday. I mean, if you take the tourists out of that Tuesday show, you've only got a couple hundred people in the building. And on Fridays, a lot of the crowd is tourists. So they might actually have to start putting actual singles matches or matches with named guys on these shows if they want to draw, because now they're drawing from the pool of hardcore fans in Mexico City. And even then, I'm not even sure how many people in Mexico City are ready to return back to going out for a night to watch Lucha Libre. Maybe they have more important things on their minds. So I'm curious to see what the turnout is going to be. I'm sure the first show or two will be great, but after that, I wouldn't be surprised if the attendance goes down a bit, and to see how CMLL reacts, whether they even attempt to try to get fans back into the building by putting on interesting matches.
Yeah, it's going to force them not to be on autopilot, which is the toughest thing for them to do. But maybe it'll lead to more interesting cards for us. Maybe it'll lead to them setting up a new direction. I'm sure they're going to want to do stuff for Dia de los Muertos again. And they need to start, if they're going to do a big match, which maybe they will, maybe they won't, they also have to figure that out soon and start building towards it. So,
yep, I'm interested to see what they do. Like, I mean, even when they announced that Friday lineup, tomorrow's lineup, that's actually not going to happen anymore, but they had the trios title match, and that's the kind of match that you wouldn't expect to just randomly appear on Friday, but clearly somebody was putting some thought into it. That seems like a match that would draw the hardcore fan in, because right now everybody respects the young Dean Amitas, and the Mephisto team has been around forever. That's definitely a match that's more for the hardcore fan than it would be for a I don't think that match gets booked if there's no earthquake and it's just a regular other Friday. They wouldn't book three Rudos against three Rudos like that.
Right. So they're going to run a benefit show at some point, and that'll probably also be loaded up. So
yep.
Maybe for hardcore fans, it'll make it more interesting than it's been most of this year for the next month or so. But what do you think they would have done? This is a question I've had in mind. What do you think they would have done if CML scheduled their anniversary show about the normal usual time and ran it on the 22nd and planned to run on the 22nd, but the earthquake canceled everything? Would they have rescheduled it? Would it be like the 1985 one where they just didn't run the match?
I think times have changed since 1985. So they promised both people payoffs. So I'm sure they would have ran the match. And you know what? Now that you ask it, I haven't even thought about it, but honestly, that might have worked out even better for them, because this year's anniversary didn't draw well. And if you would have had the delay in it, and then they would have came back and they could have advertised it as like, here's our big return to Arena Mexico, and we're doing two mask matches. I actually think it would have drawn better than it would have drawn before.
Yeah, because you have also had Niebla Roja would be healthy by that point, so he would have been able to come back and promote if he did a couple shows beforehand. Mm-hmm. And you could do some sort of Mexican pride thing about building it around. That probably would have worked. And you wouldn't have been running against a big boxing match, which clearly I wrote a lot of stuff about how if this works, this could make that day an annual tradition. And obviously that should not be a tradition, because there's a lot of things wrong with that show, but running against a boxing match seems like it totally backfired too.
Yeah. And also the ticket prices, clearly this was, you know, that the ticket prices were ridiculous for those two matches. Nobody was going to pay those. And like, if they were held off, let's say by the earthquake, and they would have had to run in October, I think it would have been in poor taste to run a show with overpriced tickets. Cause it'd be like you're gouging the people of the city who just went through a disaster. So it would have led to, I mean, there's so many variables, but we never talked about this year's anniversary on this podcast, did we?
No, because we did bother doing a podcast about it. Right. When usually, that's the other thing, is normally we would have been, when that earthquake happened, we would have been in Mexico City. So
yeah, that's crazy, huh?
Yeah, so we kind of lucked out by not going, even though that's probably like a little concern compared to everyone else. And it's not like anything, we would have just been standing out on Paseo del Reforma for a few hours. And then had nothing to do the rest of the week, but it would have just been a weird experience. But
yeah. It would have been, it would have obviously, again, low on the priority list, but it would have ruined our trip, because we go primarily for wrestling and there's no wrestling. We would have just been in Mexico City stranded, probably, hopefully been okay and just trying to help out in any way we could, because what else are you going to do? The whole city was, that's what the whole city was doing.
Well, that was the whole city, and there was nothing else to do. Everything else would have been shut down too, so. But we're glad the people who did go went the week before and just left that weekend, because that seemed like it worked out a lot better for them.
Yeah, and everybody's okay that we know of. I mean, there's nobody we know that, God forbid, was killed or had any people like that they know seriously injured. So obviously there were a lot of casualties, which is terrible. But everybody, I mean, when it happened, I was messaging a bunch of people who I know in Mexico City just to make sure everybody's okay. And actually, our good friend Black Terry Jr. and his dad were in Japan at the time. So we were trying to figure out if there was, I mean, they were sleeping at the time because of the time difference. And we were trying to figure out if anybody knew the number for Black Terry Jr.'s mom and his brother who were at home, just making sure they're okay. Thankfully they were. It was just a really scary situation.
Yeah. And I'm sure CML getting back to normal probably doesn't mean everyone's getting back to normal, but at least they were able to do some stuff with gathering food and gathering supplies for while they were off those first few days. And
I really love the story they told on Informa about the, like, you can go into it more because I just saw the highlights. I think you were actually listening, but
and I didn't have it up right then, but it the story about there's an 8-year-old boy who came by who was a Lucha fan who helped them figure out what the best way was to pack the trucks and the cars to get the most supplies in and help them figure out how to use UPC codes on all the stuff to track what they were sending. But no one ever got his name. And all they had was some pictures. So they had to put the picture up to see if they could track the kid down to see who had been invited back free for the rest of the year to all the shows he wanted to go to.
See, like a story like that, it sounds so made up, but I mean, it's true. That's amazing. I'd love to meet that kid too when I go down there.
Yeah. So that was pretty nice of them. And I'm sure an 8-year-old, I'm sure like for most people, it was like kind of a frightening time, but for an 8-year-old to go help out some luchadors and help out wrestling promotion, get stuff done, was really brave of him in a way.
Everybody did a good job from what I saw. Like on the same day, you had CMLL guys helping out at their right by the parking lot area.
Yeah.
And then right next door to there is the Blue Damon shop, and you had the Crash guys there. The AAA guys were doing their own thing in a different part of the city. It was just, it's great. The Lucha community really looked good in a time like that. And I'm not saying they did it to look good, but everybody really stepped up and it's what needed to be done, and they did it. Nobody was out there complaining that, oh, the shows are shut down, we can't work, or nobody decided to take off for another part of the country to find work somewhere else. You know, everybody stuck around there, and it was really good. I commend everybody who helped out and all the companies for dealing with it properly.
Like even the guys who don't live there normally, like Kojima and Flip Gordon were helping out. I was following, I think it was Murder Clown's Twitter that day and a couple days after, and he was just going to rescue areas and helping people out and taking photos. Just him and Monster Clown were just wandering around the city seeing where they could help people. There was a lot of people look like trying to do that same thing.
That sounds absolutely frightening.
Yes, but yeah, in the mask and everything, in the gimmick. So it was a weird thing, but it seemed like it was helping people. So
yeah.
And then the AAA ran their normal Ring Rockstar show as a Twitch show. And I think they ended up getting $4,000 in donations plus whatever they came from ad revenue, which I think seemed like everyone's hoping for a little bit more than that, but it's $4,000 they wouldn't have got on their own. And I think every bit probably helps a bit.
Yeah, I hope that they got to keep all that money, that because I know sometimes one of the things with that Twitch thing is, or as it was explained to me, sometimes people will donate money and then they'll just like take it back the next day. You have like 24 hours. So I hope they got all the money that they said they raised. And like you said, yeah, it's money they didn't have before. It was a very good gesture. I wouldn't mind if CML did something similar.
Yeah. Yeah. If they're going to, I mean, they stream all the time. It's just a matter of them finding the way to do donations, and that shouldn't be a big deal. This is the one test where it's the one moment where it's really going to test them who think internationally instead of just nationally, because I'm sure they'll be doing stuff at the buildings, but they'll need to get out there to have some place where people who are just watching the stream can give money. So hopefully they'll figure that out too.
And kudos to you for coming up with the idea about donating $5 per dive. Certainly, I don't even know if the AAA guys were made aware of it. I know on commentary they mentioned it, but
it came up once or twice.
It came up, but Aerostar only did one dive, and I was thinking if somebody told him about it, he probably would have done four or five just to do them. But we got in a pretty good amount. I think there were like 14 dives in the end.
Yeah, so
that's $80 right there.
Yeah, no, it's 16 dives. Because 14 times 5 is not 80.
Or 6, yeah. I knew it came out to $80.
this is why you can't manage the money. It would just all kind of disappear. But it was all them for giving the opportunity first to give us some money and for doing the Twitch stream in the first place. And it was cool. It was interesting to see like a normal AAA taping just as a stream. It does not work, I don't think, as well live as a watching experience as a CML one, because CML is more conscious about getting rid of the dead time, while AAA is very little relaxed and will have like 40 minutes of just shooting the ring before the show, and then whatever time they need between matches, so Vampiro can find a working walkie-talkie or whatever he needs. But I think it did work for that particular show because it was a tournament that built on itself. So sticking to the whole thing, you got to see the four qualifying matches, and then those guys come back at the end. It felt like a singular event where I think a lot of TV tapings feel like these are matches for this one show, these are matches for another show, but you're not really watching one whole thing. None of the action was really like must see, but I think for something, it was something you could eat some popcorn and watch. And I think that's all it really kind of needed to be.
Yeah, this Switch thing seems to be working out good for them. I've had no problems the last two times they've ran stuff. I mean, they hinted on the broadcast there would be a thing coming up this Sunday for Heroes Immortales, but going forward, I would definitely be interested if they could do something like that. I mean, I don't know how the contract rates work with Lucha Underground or anything, but it'd be cool if you could watch every TV taping on that platform.
Yeah, I mean, if I recall right, when we did our last live podcast from AAA offices, Oscar mentioned the idea that one day they'd like to get to the point where all these tapings would air live as well as airing on TV. And obviously, it's possible to do it with this platform. And I think people are understanding of that they're watching a show that's being taped for TV that happens to be live instead of the other way around. So it's not going to be as smooth as something that was just presented live first. But I think the big obstacle they're going to work out is to get those internet connections in places that may not, in buildings and locations that may not be set up to do live video to the internet all the time. But so far, they had no problem with the stream really at Arena Ciudad de Mexico, which they've had problems before, and they had no problems at this Hard Rock Hotel. So if they can keep doing this way, I think they're probably going to eventually build a decent-sized audience. And already, at 3,000 people for the Spanish, what was it, 2,000? I forgot what event reported. It was 2,000, 3,000 for the Spanish and 600 for the English or something like that?
Yep.
Yeah, that's about in the range. That's better than what CML does on some couple of feeds and some Tuesday feeds. So we don't really get the Friday numbers all that much. But they're already, it took CML years to get up that high to build up. So AAA's are in a good position if they can keep this. If they can keep doing these.
And I wonder how much audience is just Twitch people, because they were like, they have that annoying chat box where you can see people making comments.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a lot of people who were in there weren't the average like Lucha fans. They just showed up and they saw wrestling.
Yeah.
And they just decided to start watching.
There's advantage of being on that live platform where there are a lot of live streams, but it's not so overwhelming that if someone who does get 3,000 people looking at the same time can rise to the top and get noticed. So I think it's an advantage for them to be on that service instead of YouTube right now.
But again, if they're going to run, they should be advertising this. Like, we shouldn't be Thursday night wondering if there's going to be a show Sunday. Like, they should have told us for sure Monday, get the whole week to prepare so they could actually have good viewership numbers.
I've been thinking that I probably should bug AAA and see if I can find out if they're actually doing it, but that really doesn't help anyone, because it will help me so I can plan what I'm doing on Sunday, but what really helps AAA is that they need to get the word out ahead of time. And I assume it's a situation where they want to do it, but they don't have the details done because it's just last minute. There's a lot of stuff AAA seems like it's the last minute, but that's kind of getting in their way of doing stuff.
You're ruining your own gimmick on this show, because I'm going to repeat a quote word for word from the stream that they had.
Yes.
And it was Vampiro saying, "Wow, that Lucha Blog guy, they know everything."
See, this is why I know he doesn't read the site, because I don't really know anything at all. He especially doesn't read the previews, as the previews are terrible at predicting what's going to happen. Is there anything else we need to talk about? AAA, like, the problem is that there's really not that many interesting matches. Did you see the opener from TV this week, the Yave match?
I didn't see the TV version, but the handheld version was out there, so I watched that a while back, yes.
Yes, and that was pretty fun. I don't think it was as great as the big Triple Mania match with those guys, but it was still, the double handspring dive was really awesome. And I think, there's a problem that they're going to be labeled as opening match guys, and I think they have more potential than that. But if they're going to only be opening match guys, they're going to be really great opening matches for a while.
Yeah, it's crazy how these people are heading. I mean, I know they're not technically rookies in the sense of what rookies are, but they are rookies for the AAA audience. And these guys are having the best matches anytime they show up on TV. It's, I know it's only against the same guys over and over again, but that's fine with me. I mean, yeah. Let's do it. I'm a little worried, like you just said, that they're going to get typecast as opening match guys, because I know that coming up on the show Sunday, most of them are in like that opening 10-man scramble match where I'm assuming Johnny Mundo is going to beat them, or if not, someone's going to win with a roll-up. But the last thing I want is for these guys to be put on the same level as Venom and Lancelot type guys, because that's really not what they need.
No, especially like Hijo del Vikingo has a lot more potential than being stuck in that position.
Oh yeah,
but
maybe I'm not just waiting to find like a gimmick to put him in.
Yeah, but I think the counterpoint is that they've tried to make him Oscar de Bronce this year, and they've done such a bad job that he's back where he started, if not even lower. So
yeah.
I'm kind of like, would I like to see Hijo del Vikingo fight Hernandez and Kevin Cross for 3 months? Probably not. Or would I, as a fake elevation, or would I rather him just face the same guys? I kind of just rather him face to face same guys and just be and deal with him not being moved up at all for a while.
And the other problem that you run into AAA is Conan told the story on one of his podcasts recently is Rey Celestial, who unfortunately passed away. And since the time we've done the last podcast, when he was with AAA, Conan talked about how he wanted to make him into the new La Parquita at one point, and it just took forever, and AAA just never got it done. So even if they do have a gimmick in mind for Hijo del Vikingo, who knows how long it'll take them to implement it, and I don't want to see him waste away doing these opening matches for a year or two, or even just disappear like Rey Celestial ended up doing.
Yeah, the favorite story is that weren't we told like 3 years ago that Carta Brava was getting a new gimmick? And then...
Yeah,
it just doesn't ever actually seem to happen. So it's not like there's not 100 different old gimmicks that they could give someone if they want to come up with a new one. But
it's the Venom Luxor thing where we were told that the Space Cadets thing was in the works for a year. Yeah. And I'm like, how did it take a year to get those gimmicks when they finally came out there? I mean, there's just the old Venom and Luxor costume. Just put it together and send them out there. But apparently something in AAA behind the scenes causes these things to take a while.
Yeah.
Even Oscar de Bronce, they knew he was coming, and he debuted in that shitty outfit that looked so disgusting. And now I think they switched him into the outfit that they originally intended, right?
I have no idea. But they switch him outfits, but I don't know which one they want first.
Well, they definitely have him in. I mean, the outfit he's in now looks much better than.
Yeah.
Remember at the beginning, it looked like he was wrestling in pajamas.
Yes. Do you have any thoughts about the Heroes of Mortal Kombat lineup?
Not really. I mean, it's just a bunch of random scramble matches, basically, and multi-man. Everything is a multi-man match, even that main event, which I guess the main event's going to be the match that they intended to do at Triple Mania, but for whatever reason, they couldn't do it, except the only difference is now Joe Leader's in there to take a bunch of stupid bumps, either on their behalf or just because he wants to do it. Maybe he's not even in the match for all we know. Maybe it's just like... he's in there, but Rey Scorpion will take his place or something. I don't know.
Do you know, I was looking this up when Joe Leader was announced for this match. Do you know the last time Joe Leader won on AAA TV?
Did he beat Dalton Bragg?
It was in April in the Atomicos where he was on opposite sides of Dalton Bragg.
Wow. Because I know he was on TV recently. I didn't see the match, but I know he fought in Helico. They actually aired that match for some reason.
Yes, and even though at that point they had to know what they were, you assume they would have known what they were doing for Heroes and Mortalities. They had a Helico win, and then Helico's not on the show at all, and Joe Leader is in the main event.
That's why I'm thinking maybe it's like just a distraction type thing. Like Joe Leader's not actually going to be in the match. They're just listing him because they have a surprise plan.
But. With AAA, that's very possible, but to try to sell tickets about Joe Leader main eventing in the show doesn't seem like the smartest of ideas. But
yeah, that's true too.
I think because they're building up as a major show, and they usually do pretty well in San Luis Potosí, even when Alberto's not on the card, I think they're going to do probably not full, but reasonably occupied, like in the 80% range. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the whole three tile defense thing is going to be interesting, because if Mundo loses that first match, then everyone's going to figure, oh, he's losing the other two matches. And if he wins the first match, everyone's going to figure, oh, he's going to find some way to sneak out the other two. So I'm not sure. I think having him do three matches on the same night is kind of anticlimactic as a way to have an interesting show. But I think it's something where they're probably just not really happy with him and want to make sure he takes all his losses on his way out, given how many wins they've given him.
Who do you think is going to win the final of the Trios titles tournament match, the best of five?
I think they're going to go with Puerto del Norte, because they were rewarded for them losing their mass.
I've been following, like, that's the one thing on AAA I've really been following. I wasn't too impressed. I saw their match this past week on TV. It was kind of a letdown for me. They didn't really do much. Raptor is, I don't know, he's just not the same guy. That shoulder injury that kept him out for like 2 years must have really done a number on him, because he's just not the same guy as he was when he was Atomic Boy. I've been really underwhelmed by his performances. Aerostar is really good. Drago seems to be slowing down a bit. It's really weird, but I hope these guys go all out in their final match and they get a chance to like tear the place down. I don't need to see Aerostar jump off anything high. Hopefully they can just do a regular match. But I am curious to see how they come through, because the best of five hasn't exactly blown me away, like the Aerostar Drago best of five from Lucha Underground. But I would like to see this last match really be like an emphasis on them stealing the show, because you would think these guys would be able to, considering who's involved. Just what did you think of their match for this past week on TV?
I have not seen the one from this week. I've not seen the last one. I saw was the 10-second one they had a few weeks ago. And that was not
that was either. So bad.
Yeah, that was just, I understand why they managed to do that, especially because the rest of the TV episode was not very good. But
If you stalk Aerostar's timeline like I do, but when they had that match, there were a lot of people on his timeline. They were complaining about the fact that like they bought tickets specifically to see him, and then his match ended up being as short as it was. Like, he barely did anything in that. I don't even know if he did one thing, except after the match, I think he jumped on, or tried to jump on the pile of guys. That, like, if I was paying for a ticket to see Aerostar, which is something I would actually do, yeah, I would be really disappointed if that's the match that was presented.
Yeah, but that's the way with AAA, is that they don't really, they feel like it's like their TV product is the most important thing, but they don't really do a great job of making the TV product that interesting. And it's not like the TV product seems like it's doing that well. So it doesn't really make any sense. I think what would make the most sense is that Mascara of the Bronze finally gets his win over Johnny Mundo after 500 times of failing. That Puerto del Norte wins the Trios titles, and Aerostar and Drago go off and do something else, and that Raptor gets dropped in the Cruiserweight mix. That I have no idea what they do with the... Maybe Tejano wins the Latin American title or something. I don't really care. And then Wagner's winning the heavyweight title, because Wagner, as payment for him losing the mask. Because it seems like this is all make good for Triple Mania time.
Do you think they're going to start getting Wagner's kid involved? Because he's listed as being the second in that match.
He's always listed as the second, but never seems... We've been waiting for it to go someplace since the Massacre 2000 mask. And so I think if Wagner is smart, he wants his son to stay on the independents right now, because I don't think they would book him that strong right now in AAA.
He's really hyping the show on his Instagram, though, like the son, I mean. So I don't know, maybe this could be a chance where he's actually going to do something. Because before, aside from Triple Mania, like he hasn't hyped any shows with AAA. But this one, he's like really all in, and there are pictures of him in the gym while he's hyping it. So I wonder if that's supposed to be a hint or something.
Maybe it's just because it's a chance for him to be on TV, and he's not really on TV that much with the Elite being in between seasons right now.
I was thinking this week, actually, at some point, like, I really do miss Elite just for those mid-card matches where him, Argos, Dr. Caronte would be having...
No, I do not miss Argos matches.
Not Argos specifically, but he was involved with these matches where other guys were doing great, like Bandido, Diamante, Metaleon. I do miss those matches a lot.
I do miss having high-quality HD video of those guys as opposed to what we have for right now.
Yeah.
And I think that moves on to a different topic, is that I think because obviously Elite was a mess of promotion with people had no idea what they were doing. It had some great talent, but they really weren't capable of putting in the good show or really had a long-term plan, and they weren't drawing. But since they were not the best of wrestling promotions and they got on Azteca, I think that's probably why we are still waiting for the Crash to show up someplace, because I'm sure their thought is that if Elite can get on Azteca, then we should be able to get on Azteca, because we've got our stuff figured out a lot more than they do. And then there was that poster this past week that appeared and disappeared, and we're not supposed to know actually occurred, where that Azteca logo was on. So do you think that we're finally getting closer to resolution to what Elite's going to do with its TV?
You mean Crash?
Yeah, I mean Crash. Yeah, those are two bad things to confuse. Do you think we're getting to a conclusion where Crash is finally going to... We're not getting to any Elite conclusion ever, or we've reached the Elite conclusion. But do you think we're getting that the Crashers actually getting close to something, or is this like another? This is going to be another thing that happens but doesn't go anyplace, and we're still waiting a month from now to find out if they're going to be on TV.
I don't know. I mean, the politics are interesting, because if they do get TV, that's cool and all, but can they use Rush on TV? Would CMLL want Rush on Azteca if it's not a CMLL show? Because in theory, if you get on Azteca, you're firing shots at CMLL, because CMLL wants to be on Azteca, obviously. So it's interesting in that regard. It's interesting in the, if they get on TV, can they use Phoenix and Pentagon? I mean, I don't know what that situation is, because, you know, AAA Dorian fires all these legal threats. You would think that he would fire some sort of legal threat about you can't put these two guys on TV, even if they're using different names, because I own their likenesses. Like, how do... We don't know how well this fits in. I mean, I'm sure Crash would love to have TV, but out of their roster, who could be on TV? That's a whole entirely different question. And I don't know. Maybe that's the reason they're keeping it so under wraps, because they want to get a pilot on Azteca, but they don't want to go through the problems of AAA finding out and maybe sending Azteca a message like, hey, you're dealing with this promotion. You know, the same thing they did with Phoenix on his Noah tour.
Yeah. So that's going to be the other big difficulty. As soon as they get on TV, AAA is going to want to start complaining about it again, and they're going to go to war to figure out about who's legally able to do what. So
it's funny, because I have GFW in the background, and Tejano Jr. just walked down on my TV as we're talking about all this. And it reminds me, I meant to ask you, when we were talking about the AAA stuff, is what's happening with these Japan shows that are supposed to be coming up in like 12 days?
Yeah, and I have no idea. I mean, the AAA Japan account had said that they were going to have lineups this week for all the other teams, and that no one has been announced is very strange. And the whole thing where AAA has never acknowledged them is just really odd. Because this is not a fake Twitter account or anything. This is people who did the shows last year and who were visibly at Triple Mania this past year. So there's some sort of, it's not like AAA doesn't know this is going on or that AAA doesn't approve. They're just kind of playing dumb on it. And so are the promoters then. And you know what, honestly, probably they drew pretty well before, but I'm not sure about how they're going to draw with the matches they've announced so far. So if they were quietly canceling this, it would not be probably the worst things in their mind, but it would also be disappointing that there wouldn't be a Lucha World Cup this year. So I have no idea what the deal is.
Did you see the Andrew Everett tweet about the show?
No.
I mean, him and DJ Z are apparently a tag team in the tournament that's going on.
That would make sense.
And then on the...
But yeah, because DJ Z listed on this on his upcoming schedule, so I figured there was in there somewhere.
Right. And on the poster that he tweeted out, I'm just trying to bring it up right now so I don't screw it up. We've got Mil Muertes, Psycho Clown, Sexy Star, Vampiro, Drago, and King Cuerno pictured.
That's the one they had. That's the one they were posting originally. So,
but Sexy Star is definitely not going.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, if Vampiro was going, you think he would have mentioned it, because he's very much into mentioning everywhere he's going.
Yeah, and he's not mentioned on Facebook at all, and I've spent too much time looking at Vampiro posts on Facebook. So that suggests that it's an office issue, that he's maybe told not to mention it, because I'm sure fans have asked him about, is he actually going on the show?
These shows are definitely happening, though, because I mean, those guys have the weekend booked off. Not the Mexican guys. I'm talking about the other guys.
It wouldn't be the first time people had the weekends off and then shows got canceled underneath them.
I guess, but you would figure, like, they should, I mean, for flying to Japan, you're not buying tickets last second. They should have their flights already, and I don't know, man. This is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, there's something, I mean, maybe something rolls, they roll out tomorrow, and some big announcement, and all the AAA guys are there, and everything goes normal, but this is just, like, a peculiar way to build up a show, and AAA, so everything's peculiar, so I don't know.
There's no alternate AAA TV tapings happening that those days, are there? That we could, like, because if they were running TV, we would know for sure the shows aren't happening.
Right. No. They're not running against their 20th. They specifically have that weekend off so they could send people to the show, but.
Weird.
That's a knife in tennis. Yeah, and then they have the Cantu show is on that knife, but they don't have anyone who's been announced for that. They're only really using Wagner and the Scorpion from AAA for that show. As if there's a lot of people being sent elsewhere. You can see the show the next night, too, doesn't have too many AAA guys, so.
Maybe it's like a financial situation that's above our heads, so to speak, where, like, they're waiting for a payment and they don't want to announce anything until they get that payment, so they have leverage, who knows?
Yeah, something like that, I'm sure. What else we have talked about? But it'd be nice to have, that'd be also another event that'd be cool to see on Twitch, because I'm not sure how we're going to see it. It's got a TV slot for the second show and should turn up at some point, but I think I would stay up and watch that late night, because even though it's not the Ultra World Cup that has been the last couple of years, it'd still be pretty interesting.
Has GFW mentioned anything? Because if their guys are going, you would think that, and their partner Noah's involved.
Nothing that I've seen, but I don't follow their Impact Wrestling account.
All right. Shame on you.
I know. I've watched maybe three of the last Impacts because there's been so many AAA people on. But it's just bizarre to me. Oh, no, now I'm not going to find anything because I got a million things going on because there are live shows going on.
Yeah, I mean, in the back, you were telling me last week that the show was all AAA, and now I've got it in the background here, and Taya was wrestling. Now I see Tejano and Phantasma are involved doing something. Pagano was pictured at one point. Like, this is like AAA USA now.
Yeah, it's the show they've always wanted, and it's finally it's finally happening. No, I don't see any tweets from Impact about World Cup since 2016.
Oh, well. I guess we'll find out the day of the show whether it's happening or not.
Oh, okay, there's a Nowhere show this weekend, I think. And then you would think, while they're in Japan, because there are Impact guys going there, that's when they would make a big announcement. But I don't know. It's all very strange, even for AAA.
There are no AAA guys on this show, right? But they've got Crash guys. They've got Garza and Ultimo Ninja.
Right, but
so
they
it makes it even stranger.
But the Noah guys are in the tournament or helping out with the tournament somehow. So.
The only other company in Mexico right now that is worth mentioning is the Crash, because the Crash actually has a really busy time coming up.
Yeah,
they've got 15 shows in a month of period, basically, pretty much.
Yeah, and some of them, the lineups are even coming out. I mean, we got the Guadalajara one. It's really that first week of November where they're running pretty much every single day, maybe like one a day off here or there for travel, but they have like 8 shows in 10 days or something like that, it looks like.
All built around the anniversary tour with Rey Mysterio Jr. headlining all these places.
Yeah. I think having Rey available for these shows has probably really helped them, especially since they don't have TV yet, because he's the big star that doesn't come to these places that often, and he's still a big star. But they're loading up with plenty of other people. These are pretty stacked cards generally, I think.
Yeah, and from what I gather, even though the events are happening, like you said, 8 and 10 days and 15 throughout the entire month, it's not like a touring lineup where you're just getting the same matches every night. They're actually going to be switching it up based on a lot of factors, like guys' availability, also the fact that, like, for example, they want Rush to be a big part of the tour along with his dad. But as the story goes, they can't use Rush and his dad in places where CMLL is, so Like, that's why Rush is not on the card in Guadalajara, but he'll probably be wrestling the next day in Monterrey. And the shows that they're doing, he's probably not going to wrestle when they run Mexico City, but he'll probably be okay to wrestle in Toluca, for example, or when they go to Northern Mexico, he'll be allowed to wrestle. And there's other foreigners who they've got booked. Like, they can't use guys like DJZ, for example, on the shows for the first week of the tour because TNA is taping, or GFW is taping, actually, where I am here in Canada.
Impact is taping.
Right.
Yeah, the names, right.
I don't want to get sued, so thank you. The Impact is taping. So it'll be good because the lineups will be switched every night. Like, the first night in Guadalajara, they've got Flamito versus Sammy Guevara. And I'm sure the next night they'll change it up and they won't have the same guys wrestling. They'll probably have I think the format will be the same, where it'll be like a Rey Trios match on top, and then there'll be a big singles work rate match in the middle. It'll be interesting. I'm actually, the Crash is presenting the best lineups right now from a work rate perspective.
Yeah, and they're still building their own feuds while doing it. They're setting up Jack and Bestia, and they're doing stuff with the different rebellions, even though I think they probably could do more to explain to people who's in what group, because that seems like a big thing to them, but something that's tough for them to do. It's tough to follow if you're not at those Tijuana shows, but you can tell that they're not just doing dream matches. They have storylines that are going through the setup directions, so that when they come back to Tijuana, or even when they come back to these towns, maybe they have matches or feuds that people want to see.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they draw on this tour too, because the crash attendance just baffles me sometimes. Like, remember they went to San Luis Potosí and they had that huge crowd one time. Then they came back and they had nobody. Then they had nobody. In Tijuana, they do good because it's their home city, so I understand that. But sometimes they'll run a show with their guys in Monterrey and it'll draw only okay, not great. And then remember they came to Mexico City and they bombed, but that was crazy ticket prices.
And a tough day.
Yeah, that too. But also, like, it was crazy ticket prices for a show that didn't have anything special.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how they change their strategy going forward, because they're coming back in November.
Yeah. It's the most interesting of the promotions, because they're obviously have the most ambitious about what they're trying to get done. While AAA seems like everything was on Wagner and Psycho, and now they're still doing some Wagner and Psycho, but they haven't really established a big interesting direction, except Johnny Mundo needs to lose all styles before he goes away. And CML was not really doing anything interesting themselves, so the Crash was at least aiming much bigger.
Yeah, the Crash has all the pieces to form one of the great promotions. They just have no outlet for it right now, basically. So
yeah,
they're definitely the promotion to keep your eye on in the future.
Yeah, I think we'd be talking about their year a lot. I don't want to keep harping on the no outlet, but if they had been on Azteca in like for months, I think people would be talking about them like they were talking about Elite last year.
Definitely. Or even if they had like some internet platform to, like, if let's say AAA did have this Twitch thing, if the Crash had this Twitch thing,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure they'd be heavily talked about.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Crash have this Twitch thing? I don't even understand how Twitch works. Like, can't you just get on it?
Yeah, you can get on it. It's just, what I understand is that they did not like the deal that was being offered to be on Twitch, or they wanted something. And they did, and I think Elite. Why do I keep saying Elite? I think the Crash is afraid that if they put a price on their shows that isn't what they want it to be, then they're going to be stuck at that price, whatever outlet they try to go going forward. If they establish that they are internet video, that you know 50,000 people see on Twitch, maybe, let's say, then that's really good for Twitch, but that's going to be hurt them when they try to get a TV deal on Azteca. So, I think, I would not be surprised if they get the Azteca deal and then also somehow get an internet streaming thing afterwards, because once they have the Azteca money, maybe if Azteca doesn't have a problem with it, then maybe they'll open up a lot more. But I think the TV deal is a hold up for a lot more stuff.
So what you're saying is there's a big difference in money between TV money and Twitch money.
Yeah. And there's also a big difference in exposure that I don't think they want to sacrifice not getting. You want to talk about Grand Metallic.
I did want to say one thing. So you should turn the podcast off if you don't like negative Rob, but Rob's about to be pretty negative. With Grand Metallic, I just, you know, first of all, I didn't see Rob, but then I heard what they said, so I had to go back and like actually make sure so I'm not talking out of my ass. But I guess when they were doing a segment on Raw where all the cruiserweights are on the stage, they insinuated that he was chubby or fat. Because these lines that the wrestlers toss out, they don't toss them out randomly. These are all scripted. They come from a certain place. And it just made me even more sad about Grand Metallic's situation because, I mean, here's the deal. Grand Metallic's, Mas Quadrado is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, you know. And he, by a luchador standards, I mean, he's still brand new. He's only been around 8 years at this point. And for me, as a big fan of his career is over. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, I just say that in the sense that, like, the career I want him to see is over because he's got this WWE gig. And he's going to have this WWE gig until they decide that they don't want him to be around. He's never leaving but on his own accord for the simple reason of he's a guy with a family, two daughters. And no matter if he's making low on the WWE scale of money, which he is, it's still way more than he'll ever earn anywhere else, especially since if he does get released, his life would be back in Mexico. So for financial reasons, he's never going to leave. And the Grand Metallic that I see on when I watch him in WWE, I mean, it's fun watching him get work and doing his thing, but it's not the Grand Metallic Masco Dorado that I used to love. It's just the guy doing his routine, doing his Brillo Dorada, doing his spin on the ropes. And he's never going to go anywhere. WWE's never going to invest in him, clearly, by the way they treat him. Maybe he'll eventually get one cruiserweight program or something, but it just makes me sad because I compare it back to, like, imagine Rey Mysterio Jr. He started in 1990. Imagine in 1998, 8 years later, that was the end of his career. Like, he'd never be inventing new moves. He'd just be wrestling the same style match on the same show every week for the rest of his life. That's where I picture Grand Metallic right now. And it makes me really sad when I see him, how, like, you know, you send out those tweets every Monday, is Grand Metallic on Main Event? It's funny because, you know, he disappears for a month at a time and then he'll suddenly pop up. But it's also, doesn't it depress you at times? Am I alone here?
It feels like he could be doing much more and that they've dumbed his offense down to three or four basic spots that he can do in every match. But I don't know what the solution is. It's not just that he'll never leave. It's that WWE doesn't fire anybody anymore. So he's going to be working his entire contract until it's over. And then who knows what happens if there's still a cruiserweight division, they just might keep him around and just to have a Hispanic person as part of it, to have another Hispanic person. It's not the only one, but yeah, it feels like he'd be doing much more. And it feels like this is a even more dumbed down version of his New Japan run, where he also got the one big match against Kenny Omega and then the one big match at the end, but he mostly just did random tag matches and didn't amount to much.
Right. The difference I see with that comparison, though, is like in New Japan, at least in the undercard matches, he had the ability to do whatever he wanted. If he wanted to come up with some new spot and do it, he had free reign. Go ahead, try it out, see if it works, walk the ropes and do an extra springboard or something. In WWE, he doesn't have that freedom. He has to clear everything he does before he goes out there. They don't want him doing stuff where he's going to look stupid if he slips, not to mention he doesn't want to do something where he ends up looking stupid if he slips. So it's, for me, what really angers me is, like, I see him as a generational talent along the lines of Rey Mysterio Jr. He has the ability to do stuff with the ropes, to do moves that nobody's ever seen before. I know for a fact in his head he's got ideas for moves that haven't been done before that he wants to try, but he's not in an environment where we'll ever be able to see this stuff. And that's what makes me really sad when I watch wrestling, when I see guys who are in situations like this, where it's not like a situation like we talked about Daniel Bryan earlier. I mean, Daniel Bryan can leave and can make money elsewhere. Masco Dorado, Grand Metallic cannot do that. He's stuck here for the rest of his life, and he's going to be limited for the rest of his life. And it's great for him and his family, don't get me wrong, that they make a certain amount of money and they can live a better life than they would in Mexico. But even though he's my friend, we're not close friends. So for me, I'm just a fan of his who wants to see him be the best person he can be in the ring. And I know I'm never going to be able to see that. And it depresses the fuck out of me. And that's why when you say, is Grand Metallic on Main Event, and I have to be like, oh, great, I can record him having this 6-minute match, tag match with Lince Dorada, where they'll do a big dive at the end. But it's just a dumbed down version of Grand Metallic. And that's what makes me sad these days, seeing stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a few people in WWE who, if you're near the top, get to push what they can do. But if you're in a spot like Grand Metallic, then all the whole incentive is to work on your 4 or 5 spots. And he could do a lot more than do the same 4 or 5 spots for the next few years. But I don't know that there's a solution. I don't think this is that big of a surprise after he came in. I think it's kind of what we knew we were getting in for. But it's still disappointing that it's happening.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same thing when you look at Sombra. It's the same thing when you think about them signing Dragon Lee eventually. Mm-hmm. They're never going to do anything with these guys. Like, they don't care. They're honestly, they're just waiting until they re-sign Rey Mysterio Jr., and that's going to be their Hispanic star. He's coming back. I mean, I know people don't think it's happening, but it's happening. He's going to come back, and he's going to be put right into the position he was before, which ideally you would want somebody else to be in that position. And it's really depressing to think about at times that like it's relevant to our podcast because it's really only for Mexicans where they don't have any other options to make money. The guys who come from Japan, I mean, if Kenta wanted to leave right now, there'd be money waiting for him in Japan if he wanted to go back. If Cesaro got bored doing what he was doing in WWE and asked for his release and they somehow allowed him to leave, there would be options for him on the table. But there are no, like, when Sombra leaves, what are his options? Nothing. He just
Sombra might be an exception because he's putting so much time in New Japan that they might bring him back in a decent role. But that's even a long shot for him. But for Máscara Dorada, it's going to be, or Grand Metalik, or whatever he's going to use, it's going to be him working the WWE, the XWV indie circuit, doing the same few spots he was doing WWE to get paid. And he's probably, I would really, it'd be great if he did another Mexico run, but he's probably not going to be, his best scenario is going to be living off the WWE fame, as fleeting and small as it was.
Yeah, I mean, look at even Masquerita Dorada, Torito. He was in WWE for so long, making that money. Now he really doesn't even have to work anymore because he's saved it up and his family lives in the U.S. So now he just does occasional U.S. indie shots with the companies that can afford him or that are close by where it's not an inconvenience for him to work there. But he's largely off the mat. I mean, what's the last Masquerita Dorada thing you saw? WrestleCon was the last thing for me.
I'm not sure.
He doesn't work anywhere. Nowhere.
No. He did have the knee surgery. I think so. I think the crash show where Dima showed up and attacked him was probably the last place I saw. Mm-hmm. Since then, so I think it's perfect. But it's not like. But he's very much picking his dates. He's not working. He's not working any place besides the crash.
Yeah, and that's how I see Máscara Dorada's future. Because even if, let's say, 8 years down the line, 10 years down the line, he does end up getting released from WWE. It's his family is established in the U.S. now. That's where they're going up. That's where, I mean, his wife's probably got a job there working somewhere. They can't just pack up and move back to Mexico. That'd be a huge drop down. And like, they don't want, obviously, they probably want their kids to have a better life, you know, in the United States. So even if he does come back to Mexico, it might just be for like the occasional show where people fly him in and he works a show and then he goes back. And who knows what his mindset will be on wrestling after all these years. Maybe he's just wasting away his prime years. This is a guy who could be doing so much. And I don't know, it just makes me sad because he's one of my favorite wrestlers ever. And I see my favorite wrestler ever working there doing like 5-minute matches. It's like when I was watching Rey Mysterio Jr. doing the Filthy Animals thing and WCW doing like 3-minute matches against the Insane Clown Posse. Just, it kills me a little on the inside.
Yeah. It's, yeah, hopefully, maybe we're being pessimistic and it'll turn out better, but it's depressing that it's got this far and that he never really got a chance to do more than he's done in WWE, but I don't know.
Maybe if they do that, they sent out the survey, maybe they'll do a lucha tournament on the network and that'll change everything.
That'll be amazing. Well, because I think people we know will suddenly get employed for a few weeks to do stuff a part of it. But it would probably, we get like 15 good stories out of it, but I don't see that happening. But I see better chance that WWE takes Masquerade's rather Grand Metal seriously than doing a lucha tournament.
Honestly, I could see our old friend Jinzo getting pushed before Grand Metallica has anything done with him, because apparently he's getting really over at the NXT house shows. He's getting some TV appearances. How crazy would that be if he got called up to the main roster before Sombra even sniffed the main roster?
That would be crazy, but it doesn't seem like it's completely impossible. And it also seems like he's not being, even though he is a former guy in the Cruiserweight tournament, that because he's on NXT, I think he's much better off. Because being in that mix is a lot better than being in the 205 mix.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't actually even being on the house shows if he was on 205.
So, like, I mean, I'm sorry I had to be so negative and everything, but I just needed to get it off my chest, because it's hard to do this in 140 characters on Twitter. It's probably going to be even harder on 280 characters. Which, by the way, I hate 280 characters, because the only reason I got on Twitter was because you told me about Twitter originally, and that it was 140 characters and I wouldn't have to write my blog post. I could just sum up my thoughts easily. Now they want me to write 280 words. I can't do that.
I got you on Twitter?
You got me on Twitter, yeah.
And I have a lot to apologize to for the rest of Twitter. I'm very sorry. I shouldn't have done it. It was a mistake.
If you go back and check my first ever Twitter posts, were basically me talking about saw the Fox Sports CMLL show this weekend and just quick one or two lines about each match that I saw, because I was getting tired of putting up thoughts on my blog.
Yeah. Twitter was a much saner place at that time. There were a lot less people melting down about emails and stuff.
Yeah. What else do we have? Let's see.
With stuff coming up, I know we have Puma's heading back to the US for the Powerbomb show.
Yep. I was very happy to see that. And he's wrestling John Silver, I believe. And
And Silver looked good on the last show they did. The last streaming show, the Break the Barrier show.
Yeah, I'm actually going to subscribe to Powerbomb TV. I'm not subscribed right now, but I will for this show, because I want to see Puma wrestle. And I think it's good that they're not like putting him in a generic match against another luchador. Like, they're giving him pretty much well known on the US indie scene. They even printed out tickets with Puma's face on it. So they're really getting behind the guy. And it's really nice and refreshing to see something like that. It's nice to see US indie promoters taking a chance on somebody from Mexico who isn't named Phoenix.
I think you're cut off again. But yeah, it's nice to see them to people besides Phoenix and Pentagon and people on Lucha Underground getting a chance in indies, especially high profile ones, instead of just being on the Lucha Indies where they wrestle between 400 people, but no one knows about it. The video never gets out.
Okay. I was saying how that same day that they're doing the Powerbomb show, they're doing Aerostar versus Steve Payne in a revenge match from Lucha Underground. For those of us who weren't there to see them tear it down, apparently, in a dark match. You weren't there for that, were you?
No. I got to see Aerostar versus Kevin Cross, which was not the same thing.
Oh, God. No, I can imagine that wouldn't be the same thing. And that same day, Microman is actually working somewhere on the independent scene in the U.S., I think somewhere in Texas, so that's pretty cool. I'm happy to see all these guys getting chances. Even out in PWG land, they're giving the four-way main event for All-Star Weekend. They're doing Ray Horace versus Sammy Guevara versus, why am I blanking right now? Oh, versus Flamita versus Phoenix, which sounds incredible.
Yeah, they should really tear it down in that match. Especially, those are guys who are also working together all the time in the Crash too. So it's not like they're going against each other for the first time. They're going to know how to make that match work.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Actually, yesterday I watched, you were at the AEW show with the tag match, weren't you? With Strickland and Pentagon against Trevor Lee and Garza?
Yes.
I really liked that match.
Yeah, I thought that was the best Garza's looked in AEW, because it's working heel benefits him a lot. And I think and Strickland was pretty good, and Pentagon did some stuff. So, I thought that was a pretty good match.
Yeah, I was going into it expecting it just to be entertaining, but it was actually a really good match. And I mean, I'm not surprised Garza hasn't been back, because I'm sure they try to get it when he's working somewhere else and maybe it's cheaper and all that. just to save on fight costs. But he looked really good. I would love to see him back working regularly, because he used to be like, he had the shtick down, but the wrestling wasn't really there. Sometimes maybe he couldn't keep up. But he's really improved to where the wrestling is good. Now you combine it with the shtick and you have a really good heel, regular heel figure, not even a luchador. He's just a regular good heel that could really fit in with a lot of guys on the AEW roster. And you're going to the AEW show coming up, aren't you?
It depends if I'm around. I'm not sure if I'm going to be. So I'm trying, I'm working baseball a couple. Playoffs. Yeah. Yeah. The baseball playoffs. Because last year I tried to do baseball playoffs and AEW. I don't think you really got the most out of the other room. So I'm probably going to stick with the baseball playoffs if they're happening, but we'll see. Did you see the ACH versus Myron Reed match for Metro?
I haven't. No, I've been going back and forth. I saw that match. I saw the trios underneath with all the guys like Kurt Stallion and those guys. I really liked
them. Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
And I saw the opener was good too. John Morrison and Cabana.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't gotten into that singles match yet.
That one I remember being really good from that show. So you'll have to let me know.
Reed has been really good.
Yeah.
In the stuff that I've seen of him on the independent scene.
And hopefully we'll get to see some of the stuff he did in DTU. Although I think we probably have to go to Smart Mark Video to find it instead of DTU. But
DTU is the only company running regularly in Mexico right now. It's crazy.
Yeah. It just worked out for them that most of their shows were not in places affected. But
and they do good on the benefit show that they I think it was a new show. I don't think they had it planned. They just decided to do it. The one at Arena Neza.
And they had a show at Arena San Juan, and I think they moved it to Arena Neza.
Okay, because that they do really well for that. I'm not sure if it was like free entry with a donation or something, but it was definitely up above usual DTU standards.
And they did pretty well at the tour under show in the Arena Faction too.
Yeah, DTU is very impressive, the way they promote shows and they get people to come out. I mean, they work hard to get – they're not like the regular indie that just – like, for example, October 21st in Mexico, there's a show called Mexa Wrestling at Arena yes. San Juan Patitlan. That card is fucking amazing. They have so many good matches. It's going to probably set the record for the most Canadian destroyers on one show. But every match looks like it's going to be crazy. But they don't promote it anywhere. Like, even outside the building right now, there is no poster up for that show.
Really?
When Carl Lucha used to run there, they used to always have the poster up, a giant poster outside the building. They would put posters on all the supporters. This promotion, they're just running a show. They're just going through Facebook, just announcing matches. And, like, DTU is the complete opposite. They will go to the city. They will advertise. They will do press conferences. And that's why they draw good for most of their shows. So I'm really – it's impressive, but it really shows how these other indie promotions in Mexico are really lacking in that sense, where they'll just announce a card and they'll just assume, well, everybody heard about it on the internet and they're going to come. It's not true.
Oh, yeah. You really got to keep – because with that Mexico wrestling group, the day then they announce the match, it seems like a big deal, but then you just kind of forget they exist for a long period of time because there's no other announcement. There's nothing about the show. They just exist on those card lineup days.
Yeah, and it's like every weekend there's going to be a show at that building. You got to differentiate yourself somehow. I mean, otherwise people are just going to be like, oh, it's another week. Oh, Steve Payne's coming. Oh, that's great. But why would we go to see that show? Next week there's going to be a different show, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. There's also Monterey's running a bunch of shows. MDA has a show this weekend with Alberto versus Santo versus
Silver King.
Yeah, the guy who's going to lose.
Yes, basically.
And for some reason, Zack Sabre versus Extreme Tiger, even though you have Charles Lucero right there on the undercard.
Yeah.
I don't know. That seems like, what do you think? I think that's kind of a waste to bring in Zack Sabre to do that match. No offense to Extreme Tiger.
No, especially, you know what? I'm not sure. It's not the greatest match for Extreme Tiger or for Zack Sabre. And I'm not sure. I think the problem with some of the indie names that promotions bring in is that they don't do a good enough job of making people know why they should care or what they can do. And I think by just plopping him in the match with Extreme Tiger, you think Zack Sabre is just a regular indie guy who's going to do some big moves and stuff, and that's not really what he does. So I think when the promoters haven't figured out what Zack Sabre Jr. is, it's tough to get that idea across to the fans about why you should want to see him.
Yeah, that's why I pointed out over on your – I don't know if anybody reads the comments on your message, on your blog anymore, but I pointed out how – MDA has the money, but they don't really have anybody to come up with ideas for good matches. Whereas there's another promotion in Mexico that has good ideas for matches, but doesn't have the money. And you would think that those two companies might work together more to bring out the positives, but everybody wants to do their own thing. And that's why you get random matches like Zack Sabre versus Extreme Tiger out of nowhere. I'd much rather Zack Sabre be used by a company who actually knows who he is rather than, oh, it's just some guy, let's bring him in. Anything else happening?
I don't think so. I think there's stuff coming up in November, but I think you have special plans for November. Is that right?
I do have special plans in November. I am trying to organize a trip, whether other people come or not. I'm going for sure. So anybody is welcome to come, where I'm going to hit up Monterey for the first time. And then I'm planning on going to Mexico City for a couple days. Hopefully everything, I'm assuming by November, everything should be returned back to normal. Not normal, but as normal as it's going to be in Mexico City for a while, where Lucha Libre will be running events. So what we're planning on doing is November 4th is a Saturday. Our friend Alfredo, who runs the Riot promotion, is going to be doing a show where he's announced two matches already, Rey Horus versus Ultimo Ninja and Low Rider versus Black Terry. Nothing else has been announced publicly, right?
Right. Oh, do you have some scoops? Do you have some scoops you want to share?
I may have some scoops, but that's why I don't want to say anything, because I don't know what's been publicly announced and what hasn't been. But it's going to be a good show. Riot's always a fun time. And it's your chance to see a smaller show in Monterey. Like, this gives you the chance, if you decided to join us just for the weekend in Monterey and not go to Mexico City, this is your chance to see all of Monterey Wrestling. Because Saturday you'll get to see Riot, which is one of the smaller promotions. And then Sunday, The Crash is running a big show on their anniversary tour at Gimnasio Nuevo León, where the ticket prices are kind of expensive for a Mexico show. I think it comes out to, was it $50 US?
I haven't seen.
You haven't seen? It's 850 pesos, I believe. I don't know what the equivalency is right now. But that's pretty high prices for a Mexico show.
Yeah, $46, so you're pretty close.
Okay, so they're going to load it up, so you get to see a major show, just like if you were in Mexico City seeing a major show. This is actually going to be more major than a CMLL or AAA show. They're going to have Rey Mysterio Jr. They're going to have Rush. They're going to have Pentagon, Phoenix, all these guys. Flamita's going to be on the show. So you know you're going to get a good show no matter what. I know they're bringing in some Puerto Rican guys. I think I saw that mentioned on Twitter.
Yeah, I think the guys who have been on the Dragon Mania shows.
Okay, so it'll be like an all-star show. Then the plan is Monday and Tuesday to hang out in Monterey, just do some actual tourist stuff if you were interested in that. If you're not, you can go home for all I care. just spend the weekend for us watching wrestling in Monterey. That's cool. That's what I intend to do. I don't know how much tourist stuff I'm actually going to want to do, but I'm sure others will be interested in that. We haven't decided what day we're exactly going from Monterey to Mexico City, but we may end up being there in time to see the Tuesday Arena Mexico show. Wednesday, we're going to hopefully see a show at Arena Now Cup on one of the rookie shows. Thursday, Crash is running in Toluca. And we haven't decided. I mean, we might be so tired, we'll take a day to rest. Toluca is only like an hour and a half, 2 hours outside Mexico City. It's an easy bus ride. So it all depends on the pricing for me. Because if all their shows are going to be the equivalent of $50 US, I might just say, like, why would we hit up the Toluca show if we're going to see the same guys on the Sunday and the upcoming Saturday, you know what I mean? It'd just be kind of repetitive, but that's the tentative plan. And then Friday, of course, where else? We're going to hopefully be at Arena Mexico, CMLL. Saturday, The Crash is running Mexico City. I don't know where in Mexico City yet, but they're running somewhere in Mexico City. And it's going to be a big show, so I'm going to be excited to see that. And then we haven't figured out what we're doing Sunday. I'm sure somebody will be running Sunday, because there's never a shortage of shows in Mexico City on a Sunday. Worst comes to worst, we can hit up IWRG again, or CMLL if they end up doing an interesting show. There'll be something to do, I assure you. So if you're listening to this and you have any interest, please DM me.
If you're listening to this, you probably definitely have interest in Lucha Libre, so this is something worth considering. Right. And it's also a thing where Rob's talking about going for 8 days, but you could go, if you want, just hang out the first week in Monterey or just the last weekend around Mexico, that's definitely also an option.
Definitely. I already had one person who's interested in just doing the couple days in Monterey, and another person who's can't do the Monterey, or he wants to do Monterey, but he can only do the Sunday, and maybe he'll stick around to come to Mexico City with us. I mean, whatever you can figure out. I mean, this is your chance to either do a short trip if you just want to, if you haven't done a Mexico trip and you just want to check it out. The Mexico City portion will only be from like a Tuesday to a Sunday, let's say, so you don't have to invest so much time. If you wanted, the whole good thing about this is if you wanted to go and you were worried about taking time off work, you really only have to take 1 week off work considering how the dates line up, because from Saturday would be the first show in Monterey and then Sunday would be the last show in Mexico City. You don't even have to stay for Sunday. You could just see the crash on Saturday, November 11th, and then not even stay for Sunday. Just go home so you're there in time for work on Monday.
And right, it's an evening show, so you don't even have to worry about leaving Friday or something. Getting in, you can get in Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm going to work Friday. I'm only flying out Saturday morning, so I'll be there in time to see Riot at 9. I mean, everything should work out great. I haven't gotten your confirmation, Cubs, but I'm hoping you join us for some of the tour, even if you can't do the entire time.
Yeah, I can't decide what I'm doing next week. It's occasionally mentioned on Twitter, so I'm not thinking November is kind of tough, but I'm thinking about it.
Well, I know that baseball is not an issue because I know it's called the October Classic. It's not the November Classic, is it?
It's not, but they're kind of heading that way. But I think by the fourth, I should be clear either way. I think I'm going to be done after the first week either way, but that's another story.
So I'm just throwing it out there if anybody's interested. I'm doing it no matter what. I already have one of my flights booked, so it's not even a question of me backing out. I'm going.
You have tickets bought, don't you?
No. Well, I have tickets reserved if I need
them. Oh, okay.
So ideally, that's part of the reason I'm bringing this up so early now is, like, if you want to come, I mean, the crash tickets for Monterey go on sale publicly October 5th. October 5th, am I right? Yeah, because it's September right now. So October 5th. If you are interested in going and joining us and you don't mind paying for a front row seat, which is ideally what we're going to get, the sooner you get in contact with me, the better, because I can reserve seats and we can be, you know, we can get this whole thing sorted out. But if you don't mind sitting alone, I mean, you have all the time in the world to decide. We'll still be at the same show, so we'll be hanging out. Whether we're sitting together is not really important. And
you'll have the advantage of going with at least one other person and maybe a group. And that's probably sometimes it makes it a little harder to get around. We have a lot of people, but it makes it a lot safer and comfortable to get around. We have other people who are not from there, but who do know people who are from there.
Right. And we know the promoter of Riot, so he can hook us up with good seats. He can help us get acclimated to Monterey, show us around. So Alfredo's a good guy. You should definitely go out and support his promotion. It'll be a good time. I'm really excited to go out to see Monterey because I never thought that would be one of the places I would go see, but everything turned out great. I was really, like I was telling you, Cubs, I was so dejected that we couldn't go this year to the anniversary show like usual for our September trip. And I was worried that, because I knew I was going to go to Mexico City at some point coming up in October, November. I just didn't know if there would be any good shows to see in the time that I wanted to go. But everything worked out perfect for this trip that now it's only going to be 12 days. But there's going to be so much crammed into the 12 days. So definitely, if you're a wrestling fan, you should think about it. And if you have any questions about traveling to Mexico City with me, you can write to Cubs. Cubs has experienced it multiple times and has survived every time. So you can tell you the positives and the negatives.
Yes, the Diet Coke trips are definitely a negative.
but he survived, and he's happy.
I survived. Let's go that far.
And we got him back multiple times. So if he'll go back multiple times, you guys should experience it at least once.
So
if you heard the recent podcast that they did at Lucha Talk, they had I don't even know his real name. I know he's on Twitter, he's Champ Julius. He just went for the first time to Mexico City for the anniversary weekend and he loved it. And he's talking about already wanting to go back. So it's definitely an experience where you might think you might not enjoy it, or it just might be fun for a couple days, but I assure you, it's so much fun. Lucha Libre is such a good experience live. It'll change you, and it's so much different than seeing a show in the United States. Trust me, if you think you've seen a Lucha show in the United States, you haven't seen an actual Lucha show. So put some consideration into it, put some thought into it, let me know. Even if I have to go alone, I'm going alone, I'm going to have a great time. I don't care.
Yeah, that part I'm sure of. So I think that's everything we wanted to talk about. I can't think of anything else. We're thinking about next podcast coming back after Ultima Lucha, after the Ultima Lucha final, so we can talk about that right after it happens. if we can work that out. And also I'll talk about where the series is. If by some miraculous thing, there's actually some resolution by the time the series goes off the air. But we want to talk about that finale and where it leaves things. And then whatever else comes up, we'll talk probably about Heroes of Immortality and what it leaves for AAA the rest of the year. So that'll at least give us two things to talk about.
Yeah, and hopefully by then there'll be more, the cards will be out for the actual shows that I'm going to be attending when I go to Mexico, so we can talk about those a bit.
Yeah.
And so, I really have nothing, I mean, I have no matches to recommend because there hasn't been really much to watch with Lucha Libre on break.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can recommend aside from Bola DVDs should be ready to go by Friday. You should definitely order that because the six-man tag from night two was awesome.
That's a good scoop. The BBR in here in 90 minutes in, so. Or wherever we're in. Where are you, like, I've lost track of time. Oh, this is only an hour podcast, isn't it? No, it's 2 hours.
Yeah, we started at like, yeah, so plus the disconnect. I mean, it should be about an hour and 30
plus minutes. The stuff that I totally remember that out. It's not just silence that I've left, made you listen to for about 3 minutes. Yeah.
And so Phoenix versus Pentagon coming up in AEW. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's going to be really good. They're going to go all out for that. And that tournament's going to be pretty good, too.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can check us out on Twitter, Rob Viper, and Lucha Blog. And we will be back probably in a couple Wednesdays from now.